Thank you very much for, I mean, the journey we have taken these days. Thank you very much for accompanying us, everyone, from their own positions to their questions or the questioning. And thank you for hosting us here as well. I have prepared something, but throughout the days, I really start to doubt what to present. What do I want to share, or what can I share also? And then also because of the fact that, we have been displaced many times, and then these knowledges have moved through a lot of displacements as well, that make it difficult to really go deep into the core of the questions without an over explanation. And this will take sometimes a lot of time and effort that these formats will not provide. And I didn't want to bring a lot of references without going deep into their significance of mentioning them. And specifically because of the context of my work, I'm working with tracing some relations or some moments of politicization within the arts and the participation of artists within revolutionary struggles. So it is important to note the historical connotation of it as much as the theoretical debates that are around. And for that, you need to kind of go to kind of unfold. It's always I'm quoting Balibar, this infinite multiplicity emerge in this process of translating these knowledges. It's always like, it feels like a unity, but then when you look closer, suddenly has a lot of other points of connection that intersect. But this is precisely what I'm interested on in the question of translation. So I've been engaging with the question of translation from the position of praxis. I want to go away from the Balibar's position of translation or the cultural translation. Maybe I intersect a little bit on his intersection to Walter Benjamin's notion of untranslatability, but I go more closer to the definition, the Gramscian definition of translation, as the moment where theory and practice intersects. This is translation. So I've been recently, or like during, not recent, but in the past years, I've been encompassing a project of also building an archive from this process. And also following one debate that it's very much, I think it resonates this forum, that it's the question of whether there is something we can call Latin, like Mexican philosophy, for instance, Latin American philosophy, whether there is something we can call also on those specificities, like philosophy of praxis, and then the recognition of that praxis as also within the fields of aesthetics, which is the kind of the area that I'm working with also as practitioners, as I also recognize myself as an art worker. So on these, I think there are some resources that I kind of share this thought. Perhaps Paul Huntundi is one of them, when he speaks about the question of African philosophy and the fact that he's trying to make an argument against ethnophilosophers by saying it's not about looking at our roots and our past and so on. It's about generating a collective body of knowledge together, those who embrace this question, disregarding conditions of identity, not unacknowledging them, but disregarding this. Then also, I feel like a little bit the position of praxis within the artistic field, for me, intersects more, less with Amiri Baraka's earliest conflicts of his, whether he was, while doing literature, whether he was kind of reinforcing this hate of himself. And I want to go more into the kind of revolutionary potential within this. Because, I mean, as we know, and here's where I maybe also bring some resources from French philosophy, like Althusser's statement, philosophy is class struggle in theory. Therefore, now here referring to an author I work very close to, art is class struggle in the imagination. So these, for me, are the starting points. So if we think of that, and we bring this question of the transformation of society as a collective process, we engage also, again, with the question of violence as a kind of organizer as well in society. And I've been trying also to draw some references on how to deal with this question. Specifically, the question of revolutionary violence. As many of the authors I've been kind of close to that have been nourishing my understanding of the world have been embracing this question to the ultimate consequences. So, I don't know, I was planning at first to present a little bit of the translation work that I've been doing of Alberto Ijar Serrano's work. But I think I will not go in that today, because it will, as I explained, it will take me so much time to unpack all the references and the trajectories. Being like also like an art practitioner, a philosopher, but also a military of the National Liberation Force in Mexico, Nicaragua, Bolivia, Guatemala. So it's very complicated stories to unpack in this short time, also without knowing that we won't share those references. So I think I will try to maybe take some notes from an earlier kind of on this translation project, an earlier stone that I throw to the debate here within the context of Finland, but also within the context of Europe, in relation to the internationalization or the internationalist dimension of thought, of revolutionary thought within the practice of artists, by kind of drawing a parallelism between two authors that I'm sure one you know very well, Walter Benjamin. Those who don't know, raise a hand. I see. And David Alfaro Siqueiros. Please, those who don't know him, raise a hand. David Alfaro Siqueiros. Yeah. There is, and have you read his works, by the way? Besides the mural paintings that he was doing, have some of you read David Alfaro Siqueiros? Because he has been translated as well broadly, but I don't know, have you read? Those who have read, please raise your hand. Okay. So this I mean, connects again for me with the question of philosophy in Bolivar's terms, that the practice of philosophy is writing, and if we think of the theory as class struggle through the writing process and so on, it's a core to understand this unparity that we are seeing here. Because meaning, I mean, if we follow the traces of Siqueiros in Europe, he was living in Paris for a while. He participated in the Spanish Civil War. You know, of course, he moved through a lot of other locations. But meaning that he had also a political and activist presence within the European context, yet there is a lot of things that hasn't been. And I will address to this because I want to deal with it in the question of praxis, like meaning revolutionary praxis, and how these two authors interpret the question from the position of critique. One strong kind of line of thought that has been developed to the practice of Siqueiros' work, as much as in Benjamin's work, is the critique to idealism, like idealism in philosophy, idealism in the arts. So very much, a lot of for example, a lot of the statements that Siqueiros published were against the idealist school of painting that was coming or was influencing the understanding of modernity in, like, elaborated in Paris. So some of these texts he refers to. I will see it a little bit. Just one thing that I forgot before moving forward. There is an argument that I want to look at also in this question. I don't know how far I could get with this because it's so extensive and I just tend to keep talking. But there is an argument that I want to raise in this question in terms of the universality and the distinction between universal law and insurgent universality. I don't know if you are aware with the second term. Okay, but basically, like, kind of the paradigm of structuring our relations in society has been dominated within the first framework, universal law, meaning that, yeah, we recognize we're all human and so on, but we are subjects of law. We are seen as victims who elaborate upon the rights to access the tools for the humanist tools, no? Like whether democracy or political representation and so on. On the other hand, insurrectional universality, it's a proposition that, I mean, conceptually it emerges after the French Revolution with the first Human Rights Act, but it has a longer tradition. It's just being recognized or named within this specific period. And the tradition that I want to call upon is the kind of the insurgent, the revolutionary autonomous tradition of the people. The people who have been fighting constantly through thousands of years of domination to think of a different possibility and perhaps intersecting with what Marx had been defined as well very much of the fact that considering violence as the midwife of history. So this is this insurgent universality, kind of, I will say, just like summarizing, but does not position the people as a passive victim or subject, but as active agents of a politics that demands freedom for everyone. Now, this is a very strong argument. If we see the kind of, if we want to analyze this genealogy, I mean, the most perhaps well-known example that is being kind of breaking the contentions of both nation-state, but also mediatic contentions at the moment, a point of reference for many of us, is the Zapatista movement. And the most well-known slogan, nothing for us, everything for everyone. This is a position of insurgent universality. Nothing for us, everything for everyone. I don't know if you see the radical difference that it claims into any political argumentation. Meaning there is no point of exclusion. Whatever is fight for everyone. Whatever is achieved, it is achieved for everyone. There is no us in that us. Everything for everyone. Okay. So, so just saying that, I also want to intersect. I don't think if I will actually get to the points that I want to bring forward. But I want to intersect with another question, with another thing that... usually people ask you, where are you from? Like, and I really like this question in the sense that, I mean, it's an opportunity to tell where have you been and how you feel. And Gabriel Garcia Marquez, you probably know this author, he write in a very nice, put it in a very poetic way, we are not from where we were born. We are born. We are from where our death once lie. Do you follow me? We are not from where we are born. We are where our death once lie. So this is the statement that I'm standing on when the people ask me, where are you from? I'm from all the deaths that have been carrying me to this point. I will take a little bit of water. So just acknowledging a little bit that I ooh, it's broken. Another one. Well, we say that we have to throw water so things, life grows, right? Acknowledging this, I mean, another very important thing to remark within the revolutionary process is that the use of guerrilla has been, it's a long tradition. Perhaps this has been historicized lately, like most strongly in the 60s after the Cuban Revolution and its prominence. But it's a strong tradition, and it doesn't follow like, it appears in different places of theorization. It doesn't necessarily appear as books, as there is the argument that whether like Maoist and the Maoist positions on revolutionary positions influence Che to whatever take whatever the direction or not, or the Foucault theory has much it has influenced other positions. I think it is a very diverse internationalist history that moves under the roots, moves under the ground. It kind of pollinates in different ways that it's very difficult to argue that. But of course, there is certain things that I think are very important that in terms of these political relations, that is the focusing on the program, focusing on the strategies, and focusing on the tactics. These three definitions as a places of study. So thinking of that, I just want to acknowledge something very briefly. That it's a siege that happened in Mexico about 50 years ago that gave kind of birth to a new understanding of revolution, which was the siege to Nepantla. Well, it's called Operación Nepantla, which was the siege to Casa Grande, that it was the secure house of the National Liberation Forces in Mexico, well, in Mexico, or in the national dominated territory, and to the life of our comrades there, Fidelino Velázquez, Elisa Irina Sáenz, Federico Caraballo, Raúl Pérez Casque, Carlos Vives, Genaro de Lin, Juan Guichard Gutiérrez, Clemente Guichard Gutiérrez, Cesar Llanes, who they were known as the first, because they were the first who installed the first Zapatista camp, who later became the Caracol, La Realidad. And you see still some murals there of Cesar Llanes in the entrance. So I will now go to the comparison just with few statements between Benjamin and I don't know if we how are we in time. I lost my track of time all the time. So.
Yeah, me too. Well, at least like 10 minutes.
Okay, so we have enough time. I mean, when thinking of the aesthetic dimension of revolutionary praxis or praxis itself, I mean, I want to cut out the word because I think for me it's obvious, but the irony plays a very important role. And you see it like in the Zapatista statements, I mean, how much this irony has played to mobilize the messages. And I was thinking, especially in relation to this question of insurgent universality, of a poem. I don't know if you know Roque Dalton. Okay. Some know Roque Dalton. This poem was published in Casa de las Americas house, which is a house that was started just after the achievement of the Cuban Revolution. And it's called Tomar el Poder, and in parentheses, and Leninism, sorry, Tomar el Poder y el Leninismo por las Hojas, to take power and Leninism, in parentheses, by the paper, or through the pages. It can also be translated like that. So Dalton, you say, and quoting, the problem with power is that it has to be taken. You say the problem with power is that it has to be taken. The adventurer says, then there is no problem. The anarchist says, to the heck with taking power. It's all about destroying power, all power. To the right winger, not daring to call his name, he says, what is he saying? What is to be taken? The problem or the power? The phrase makes no clear sense. Then the bureaucrat of underdevelopment replies or says, that is an anti-party reflection that reveals your roche petite bourgeois. It is necessary to comprehend that for now it is enough with what our party has, an elaborated vision, arduous indeed, thought almost 50 years, a perspective of power. I take this word, with this quote from a book that it's called Red Book for Lenin, that it's a poem collage book. So it's a very artistic approach to the theory, to the revolutionary theory in Lenin's work, through a series of poems, then some intersections of his writings, then some intersections of other writings. It's a very, very, very significant piece. And I bring this by saying that how much this awareness of the kind of, where do we look our sources for theorization as well, for analysis and so on, how much we have to widen there. So back to Siqueiros. And give me a second. So we probably know a lot of Benjamin, so I will not touch him that much. I will touch mainly Siqueiros just to simplify the time that we have. So the practical actualization that distinguished Siqueiros can be followed when contemposing those authors' approaches regarding critique and the critique of critique. While Benjamin addresses literary criticism, thus deepening allusions remain unfinished and unpublished, Siqueiros built a materialist critique that expanded into the analysis of ideological wars historically from the position of art. So first, Benjamin. Regarding the terrible misconception that the quality indispensable of a true critique, quote, his own opinion, it's quite meaningless to learn the opinion of someone about something when you do not even know who he is. The more important the critique, the more he will abode baldly asserting his own opinion, and the more his insights will absorb his opinions. Instead of giving his own opinion, a great critique enabled others to form their opinion on the basis of his critical analysis. Moreover, this definition of figure of the critique should not be private matter, but as far as possible, an objective, a strategic one. What we should know about a critique is what he stands for. He should tell us this. Investigate why the concept of taste is obsolete. It emerged in early stages of capitalism. Now we are in late stages. And this is from Benjamin, Lexicon of Literary History. Now Siqueiros on the same stand. Having ingested the poison of art purity, These colleagues will never succeed presenting a learning with a concrete plan and higher works. This learning could start with the following critique. 1. Systematic critique of Mexicanist conceptions. In parentheses, nothing is worse than arts staunching to nationalism. 2. Systematic critique of artists' purist vocations. In parentheses, luckily, larger theoretical intentions than formal applications. Close in parentheses. Systematic critique of mystical ballast and romantic subjectivism. In parentheses, antithetical elements to modern or integral realist intentions. 4. Systematic critique of colonial intellectual art purity. In parentheses, malinchismo. Chronologically outdated of subjectivist decorative painting and of adherents of exhausted disgraced schemes from the modern modern school of Paris who only respond to the snuff market. 5. Systematic critique of neo-academicism, Mexicanist and conservative. 6. Systematic critique summarizing of the two causes of breakdown, therefore crisis of our modern painting in Mexico as a whole. A, or first, the persistence and the stagnation of the theories and material techniques and styles. B, or second, the ongoing dissertation from the neorealist movement postulates and practices. So a shared question between them. What is the position of a work in relation in the relations of production of its time? This is the core question of aesthetic analysis in Walter Benjamin, right? And it's also the core question in the artistic practice of Siqueiros. Mural paintings live the life that the world lives. That was affirmed by Siqueiros, annotating a notion of an infected art, or an arte contagiado. By its contact with life, the lived space in common, the social, popular, real, and in constant transformation, with societies divided by class, it's impossible and will be impossible to elude the political use of art, quoting Siqueiros. He concludes calling for a recuperation of the future possibilities for free arts, defended by arts of liberation. Siqueiros' remarks were not limited to the critique of idealist art, but also engaged in the critique of political art. He supposed inquiries were last resumed, for example, in the 1938 manifesto towards a free revolutionary art, which was written by André Breton and Trotsky when they were in Mexico, but then later signed by Rivera for tactical reasons. But mainly they were summarizing Siqueiros' positions, pointing at the problem of mystifying resistance attributed to art objects. The relevance of these questions remain actual today. So, I don't know. I think you could search a little bit, like if you don't know much about the traces of him in relation to the miners' workers, for instance. He was leading the syndicate during the time as well. So there is a lot of intersections that I wish we could discuss also openly in the terms of practice. But I think because of this lack of references, shared references and translations processes, we will not be able to do it. But I think this is also a name of, if we think from the position of getting rid of these kind of colonial frontiers, we should start thinking of. Thank you. I think I can close there and then we can discuss.